Dakota County Board of Commissioners meeting, Dakota County Board of Corrections meeting, Monday, January 11th, 2010, 4 p.m.
Call meeting to order. Would you stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. A current copy of the Open Meeting Act is posted on the east wall near the entrance to this room and is available for review by all citizens in attendance. Would you call the roll, please?
Puskay?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Zemez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes. At this time, approve the minutes of the previous meeting of the Board of Corrections.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes of the Board of Corrections. Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. Any corrections, deletions, additions? Call roll.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Puskay?
Yes.
Okay, at this time, the first order on the agenda is the election of the chairperson for the Board of Corrections. The floor is now open.
I would nominate Bill McLarty.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
Motion made and seconded for Bill McLarty. Any other nominations?
I'll make a motion that nominations cease and that we cast a unanimous ballot.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to cease nominations and cast a unanimous ballot for Bill McLarty. Call roll.
Okay. We'll take roll on the nominations. Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Puskay?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Nominations to cease. Cast unanimous ballot for the chairman. McLarty?
What?
You had two motions there.
First we had the nomination.
Was
then
that a motion?
Then we had the motion for it to cease.
Okay. I thought that was a motion.
Was a motion for it to cease and cast unanimous
okay.
ballot.
Sorry.
Okay. Nominations for vice chair for the Board of Corrections?
I nominate Rick Puskay for that.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for Rick Puskay. I should say he's nominated. Is there any other nominations?
I would move to nomination cease and cast unanimous ballot for Rick Puskay for vice chairman.
And I will second that.
Motion made and seconded that the nomination cease and cast unanimous ballot for Rick Puskay. Comments? Call roll.
McLarty?
Yes.
Puskay?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
Okay. I go to miscellaneous items, jail report. Gary? Okay, the figures that appear on the jail report this time will reflect the entire calendar 2009 and half of the current fiscal year. We finished the month of December with 90 county inmates, 28 federal inmates for 118 average daily population in-house. For 2009, we finished at 96 county, 34 federal, and our average daily population in-house was 130 inmates. Marshal's income for December, $56,309.50, which gives us $332.12 for the fiscal year. We finished calendar 2009 with $831,854.92 in Marshal's income. Our per diem costs for December were $66.88. Now that's high, but it's explained in the narrative there on the second page as to why this time around we end up with such a high figure. For the fiscal year, it's taken us $52.25 a day per inmate. Calendar 2009, we finished with an average daily cost of $49.66. For the calendar 2009, it was $169.65 for juveniles. And so far, for the first half of this fiscal year, we're $145. In December, we're down $134. As of this point in our budget, we're halfway through the fiscal year at 4%, or $116,000 under authorized budget. The reason we're high in December is there's 27 pay periods in 2009, which is one more than normal. And 15 of the 27 fell after July 1st. July 1st when the pay raises take effect. So we get the full brunt. We have more pay periods than in the second half of the year than we do in the first. December shows, if we just had everything the way it should be, per diem costs across the board without any of those variations, first half would have been $47 and the second half would have been $52. We've been fairly close to the splits. December was particularly high because three of those pay periods fell in December, and we had the Thanksgiving holiday pay period appear. So the first pay period of December, we paid out the Thanksgiving holiday pay. Without that increase, without any of that being in there, our per diem cost would have been $54 as opposed to $66. I've attached for you the monthly month-by-month figures for the two-year period 2008-2009. This represents the 2 years that I've been here, and you can see where our county and federal inmate populations have been monthly and what our average daily population has been during that time, and note the increases within that. We received our first ICE detainees during the month of December. We've moved our work release inmates to the old jail because they're minimum security inmates, which gives us 10 spaces in the new jail in the work release living areas where we house the administrative ICE detainees. When we projected the number of federal prisoners we were going to receive during the fiscal year, we did not include ICE because we weren't sure what our situation was going to be with ICE. But they now add to our federal income. So as a result, they help push our December income to a four-month high. We experienced water leaks in the new building on Sunday. There was some significant leakage. We had some tiles fall from the ceiling in B pod. That's a 22-foot drop, so we managed to evacuate that pod so we didn't have anybody injured. Similar leaks were found in C and D pods, as well as satellite in the hallway between satellite and the kitchen. Spoke with the contractor this morning. They indicated the most likely cause had been snow drifted against the roof units, which would cause blockage of the air exchange system, the moisture condensation that run along our heat runs. So today, we spent the day after moving all the heat, the snow away from those roof units, and we're moving the snow just generally off the roof. Tomorrow, we'll finish moving all the snow off the roof. There's going to be a small sheet of ice there that will melt with the sun. We'll open up the roof drains, and that should take care of our leakage. We have some spare tiles, and we have scaffolding, so we'll set up the scaffolding, bring the spare tiles in, set those back in place, clean it up, move everybody back in the pod, and we should be ready to rock. Then we've got to come over here to this old jail and get that roof taken care of, too. We don't want to wait on that. There's some pretty significant drifts up there. And if we get the snow taken off of that, then we shouldn't have any leakage. Even though it's a new roof, we don't want to have all that much weight sitting on that new roof. So if we get that squared away, we should be okay for the...
Okay, thank you. Questions for Terry? None? Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it.
Thanks, sir.
Moving on down, committee report. Reference to jail. Member report. Reference to jail. Public comment period. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the Board of Corrections on any issue reference to the jail that was not on the agenda? Hearing none then, entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Motion made and seconded to adjourn the Board of Corrections. Call roll.
Buskay?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLaurin?
Yes. We have adjourned now the Board of Corrections, so I'll now call the Board of Commissioners meeting to order. A current copy of the Open Meeting Law is posted on the wall near the entrance to the Board of Commissioners room and is available for your review. I'll call roll.
Buskay?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLaurin?
Yes. First item on the agenda is nominations and the election of chairperson. So the floor is open for nominations.
I'd like to make a nomination for Bill Mazzarti for chairperson of the board.
I'll second that.
That nomination's on the floor. Any other nominations? Any other nominations? Entertain a motion to end, Dennis?
I move that the nomination cease and cast unanimous ballot for Bill McCarty for chairman.
Second.
Motion made and seconded for nomination cease and a unanimous ballot be cast for Bill McCarty for chairperson. Call roll.
Brody?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLaurin?
Yes.
Buskay?
Yes.
The floor is now open for vice chair.
I'd nominate Rick Buskay for vice chair.
Second it.
Did I hear a second?
Yeah.
Okay, we have the nomination of Rick Buskay. Any other nominations? Any other?
No.
Need a motion?
I'll make a motion that Rick Buskay be nominated and seat nominations.
I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded. Nomination ceased, and the secretary be instructed to cast unanimous ballot for Rick Buskay for vice chair. Call roll.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLaurin?
Yes.
Buskay?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Moving to the next item, approval of the previous minutes.
Some of it was that minutes.
I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. Is there any corrections, additions, deletions? Hearing none, call roll.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLaurin?
Yes.
Buskay?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Okay, with your approval, I would like to move a couple of things up on the agenda. First of all, Three Rivers Benefit, Don Faber, wants to address the board. Don?
Thank you. I'm Don Faber with Three Rivers Benefit Corporation, and I believe that there was a typo in your in the minutes. It says in here that mental health parity is not the law for employers over 50, and it should say is now the law for employers over 50. It's important today that you understand what this new law does and make a decision on how to proceed. As all of you know, the United States House of Representatives is the one that initiates bills that go through Congress. The Senate does not. Well, the Senate decided to take a bill that was laying around and put the stimulus package as an amendment to it and send it back to the House, and that was the stimulus package that passed. And they used the House's version of mental health parity in order to do it. So effective with your renewal in March, the Wellspring Act, as it's called now, takes precedence for groups over 50. If you offer mental health services, and that's mental health service, mental nervous, drug and alcohol, addiction services, you can no longer restrict it to numbers of visits or to dollar amounts or to amount of inpatient days. If you cover it, you cover it exactly as you do your medical. Now, you do not have to offer it, but if you do, it will be offered at exact parity with what you have for your medical. Now, let me just explain a couple of things. With medical, there are what the medical community calls pathways. If you have a broken leg, they know from all the research and computers and documentation that if you follow procedures A through Z in a straight line, you'll have the best outcomes and the lowest cost for someone to be back and heal fully. Mental health doesn't work that way. Mental health could loop backwards. It could be all over the place. You could have somebody in an institution for a long, long period of time. Today, it's restricted to 30 outpatient visits and 30 inpatient visits per year. You could have somebody in there indefinitely because there are no pathways for mental health. Everybody's a little different, and so it's kind of a touchy issue. It also carries with it about a 10 to 12% effect on your premium for your stop-loss coverage as well as the aggregate amount. In other words, the amount that they'll cover after you reach a certain level, your risk factor. So you really need to make a decision because we need to know if you want to cover it or if you don't want to cover it because when we go back to the carriers, we have to know, and they're going to adjust accordingly. Now, some people are not covering it and are offering alternatives such as an employee assistance program on the side. But if it's in your ERISA plan, if it's in your self-funded plan, it will be covered at 100% and there's nothing that you can do about that. So it really becomes a difficult situation because there are need. There's need out there for mental health and substance abuse.
When does that go into effect?
Goes into effect for you March 1st. It was actually signed into effect. President Bush actually signed it in 2008 as part of the Economic Stabilization Act of 2008. Now, I can tell you what effect it's had so far under the restricted basis if you would like to know. In the year, and I'm going by calendar year and not your plan year, but in the year 2007, you had 9 participants, and you only spent about $1,000. In 2008, you had 12 participants, and you spent almost $4,500. In the year 2009, year to date, you've had 14 people, and the bill was $53,000, of which you paid $10,400. So I tell you that simply because of the numbers of people that are participating, not the dollar amounts, because the dollar amounts mean nothing today on what you've paid so far because this is a restricted plan. If you take the lid off, it's hard to say what would happen. Now, there is a provision in the law that says that you can opt out of it if, in fact, it increases your costs, but you have to have 6 months' worth of data before you can actually apply for the opt-out, and then there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. But it talks about your claims costs increasing by more than 2% in the first year, but you have to have 6 months' worth of data before you can even apply for it. So that's what I know. I know that we need to find out if you want to offer it or if you don't want to offer it. There are other alternatives out there that you can offer it. It's not up at the same level. Make no misunderstanding. There's nothing out there that's going to be at the same level. But some clients are using employee assistance programs through hospitals or whatever to do counseling and those types of things. You can offer prescriptions. Okay, those can be included because it's difficult to ascertain what a certain prescription is used for. For example, antidepressants are used for mental disorders. They're also used to control things like epilepsy and other conditions. So you can't say whether a physician or whether a prescription is used for mental just because of its classification. So you can cover prescriptions, but if you decide to cover it, it's going to be at the level equal to your medical. If you decide not to cover it, it will not. When the doctor diagnoses a mental disorder in an office, it will not cover the office call. Anything else in that one, it will cover. Inpatient, it won't cover. Treatment centers, it won't cover. So,
if we don't cover it, what is our liability?
If you don't cover it, You don't cover it, you don't cover it. In other words, your liability, according to the ERISA plan, you don't have any liability. The only other thing you might consider is if you're not offering any kinds of mental health services, whether or not people need treatment are going untreated, and I don't know if there's any other outside liability for you or not. That I can't answer. But again, we have clients that are not doing it at all. We have clients that are doing it, and we have those that are taking approach to use an outside employee assistance program to try to get those people who need some help a limited amount of help at a much more limited liability and treatment. So, but it's not on par.
How expensive it is, you said?
For alternative treatments, that all depends on whoever's doing it. It's not all that much. Probably not as much as you spent this last year. I know there are companies that are worried about their liability if people don't get the medications, and that's taken care of the fact that they get the medications. But I would also tell you that most of the claims that you have here are not for in-depth psychological issues. They're more for family doctors prescribing medications and those kinds of things. ADHD for children falls under that category. Those kinds of things are in there. So again, it depends on how the physician codes it, but it's unfortunately, I think the intent of the bill was to try to help people, and in a lot of cases it's backfiring, it's going to leave people uncovered. So
what would that 10-12% increase translate to in dollars?
That's a good question. I'm guessing probably anywhere from 10 to 20,000. And again, that's just the premium. That's
right.
Not the claims.
Right.
Claims could be unlimited.
Right.
If you put somebody in the hospital and leave them in there for a long, long period of time, it could be you've got a maximum of $2 million. Nobody knows. That's part of the problem. And unfortunately, I need to have a decision, because the lack of a decision will mean it'll be in there, because that's what's in there today. So we'll get rates based on that. So
you need a decision by March 1st?
No, I need the decision today so that we can get the rates. We've begun getting quotes from all different carriers. We started that last month already.
Okay.
But unfortunately, this is something that requires you to make a decision, because, again, if you don't make a decision, then it's in, and the default would be...
I'll make a motion that we opt out of the mental health parity.
What? Say it again.
My motion is to opt out of the mental health parity part of the insurance.
Do we have a second?
Yeah, I'll second that. Go ahead.
Motion made and seconded to opt out of the mental health part of the bill. Questions?
Do we need to decide today whether we want other options?
Those are open. Those are open for you to do at any time you want, because it would involve a program outside of your ERISA plan.
Okay.
Okay, it would not be governed under the ERISA federal law. It would be any benefit package that you could put together with an outside vendor to allow for, to pick up some of this. But that doesn't need to be decided today. It could be done anytime.
Okay.
Any other questions? Questions anywhere? Call roll.
McLarty.
Yes.
Muscay.
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Tomas?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Don.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time.
See you in a few weeks with the numbers for your
All right.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Moving to the next item, is Mr. Kimball here? Mr. Kimball, the floor is yours.
See you later. Good afternoon.
You will be limited to 10 minutes.
Oh,
okay, that's fine.
No, thank you very much for giving this opportunity to just say a few words. I will be brief. I was in Sioux Falls all day today, and I made these notes about a week ago, so if I have to refer to them a little bit, please bear with me. My partner and I own a farm out here near Willis, Nebraska, 282 acres, and we've owned the farm for about 11 years. And the two fellows that farm it for us are Jim and Doug Nelson, who have farmed it for many, many years prior to that. And they do just, I doubt if there's any two better farmers in Dakota County than Doug and Jim. And so for 11 years, we've been going along just fine, and our taxes have been going up just like everybody's. We've got $200 a year, and we paid it just like everybody else did. A couple weeks ago, we got quite a shock. Our taxes went from, just on that farm, from $4,700 a year to 86 cents short of $9,000. To put that in perspective, that went up darn near 100%, 90% in 1 year's time. Think of everybody in this room that's got $3,000 taxes on your house, and you get a notice that your taxes are now not $3,000, it's $6,000. We did nothing to improve the farm. It's the same thing it's been since the day we bought it in 1999. I'm sure what we've done here is legal. I don't think it's right. And the main reason why I'm here today is to just please let this group know that I am sure that you people have many farmers in Dakota County. Many of them are young farmers trying to get started and everything. You can't double their taxes in a year. You just can't do it. If you do it more than a few times, you'll break them. Just think of your own real estate taxes doubling in a year. For no reason. Not for no reason, but just doing it. It just can't happen, especially in a year where you had a 10% unemployment rate nationally. I realize in Dakota County it's probably not that much, but this hasn't been a great year for people. And to double their taxes in a year's time is a little rough. I contacted the 9 farmers around me and visited with them. All of them pretty much agreed with me, but I'm in a little different situation. In fact, that I'm not a resident of Dakota County. I'm a resident of South Dakota, and so it's not my neighbors that I have to go to the grocery store and see every day that have to come in front of this group. And so, of the 9 people, I can assure you that all of them didn't like the idea of their taxes. Just to give you an idea. No, I'm sorry. I'm talking about assessed values. Of these 9, people, they had their assessments raised from 68% until 100 to over 166% in these 9. I have one farmer with me today, Mr. Charles Nelson, who just happens to be Doug and Jim's father. His taxes went up 101% in 1 year's time. That's tough. I mean, I get the feeling that none of you have experienced this dramatic increase in taxes anywhere. I spent about 3 hours with Mr. Dick Erickson at the assessor's office last week, and I will tell you, Dick did an excellent job of explaining to me how he arrived at the new assessed value and everything. And although I'm still not satisfied with the increase in the evaluations, I do understand that there is a need for increasing the revenue, and so the assessment had to be raised. I can also tell you, I would doubt whether we would sell the farm today for the assessed value that Dick put on it. And so, but anybody can say that. Most of you can say that about your own house too. Would you sell it for the assessed value of the home? Probably not, unless it's a rare instance. Don't forget, these taxes have gone up in one case of these 9 people, 166%. I got a deal. Mine only went up 90%. Mr. Nelson's went up 101%. I realize it's you guys have got to find a way to generate revenue. I understand that, but here, just hear one more thing and then I'll be done. I own a total of 4 farms. two in Nebraska, one in Iowa, and one in South Dakota. In Union County, South Dakota, I pay $25 an acre in taxes on a farm that is as good or better than the one in Dakota County, which is over by Willis, Nebraska. And I also own a farm in Dixon County, Nebraska, where I pay $21 an acre. That's a hill ground farm, and I will readily admit that it is not as good as the other two that I talked about. The last farm I have is a Woodbury, Iowa farm. That is a farm that's better than any of the other three that I've already mentioned, and that those taxes are $17 an acre. The new assessment for the Dakota County farm right here out at Willis, Nebraska, is $36 an acre. That's $19 an acre more. I can tell you that we won't be the ones that are paying that. Doug and Jim Nelson will be paying it. And I don't know if I can impress upon any of you. I have to impress it. Somehow you're going to have to find a way to address where your revenues are coming from, because you're going to break these young farmers, especially, and farmers that are just on a shoestring. I don't know if any of you are farmers or not. I don't know if any of you are landowners or not. But it's almost incomprehensible to me that you can more than double a person's taxes on a single piece of property. I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to maybe let off a little steam. I know you guys have got a tough job making things meet, work and everything. But doubling farm taxes it's not right. It just absolutely isn't right. I'll sure try to answer any questions that somebody would have.
Any questions for Tom?
Tom, what is your land valued at on your farm? If you don't mind me asking.
Oh, no, I'll be glad to tell you. The one here in Dakota County.
Yeah, in
one. Okay. Dick, you have it?
$1,688 an acre.
$1,688 an acre.
Is that bottom ground or
gold
ground?
Most of it's bottom ground.
Good ground. Well, good land. Good land. No, I have no fight with Dick as far as the evaluation is concerned. Believe me, if there's problems in this situation, it's not the evaluation of the ground. Nobody likes to have their assessments doubled, but it happened, so it happened. I understand, too, that Ponca, I guess we're in a school district over there, in Ponca, that's building a new school. Hey, anywhere you cut it, anywhere you think about it, you can't double a man's taxes in 1 year. Can't do it. Not more than once, anyway.
any of you farmers? Understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Questions? Any more questions from the board for Tom?
How much did the assessment go up in 1 year?
Mine went up 88.5%, and I got a deal. Some of them went up 161. Charles, Mr. Nutt?
Yours went up
66. No, I'm sorry. Assessment. I apologize. Assessment. Our assessment went up how much?
66%.
Okay. Think about that, though. I've been throwing around the increases for the increase in the taxes. I mean, I'm talking dollars and cents. I'm not fighting assessments, although it was still a pretty good jump. 66%. Your house assessment went up 66%. That would be to me out of sight too.
Okay. Any other questions? Any other questions from the board? Okay. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Dick, you have something you'd like to say?
First off, I want to apologize. I misspoke when I said it was bottom ground, because what it is it's mostly flat, but it's not the bottom ground you're talking about over here below the bluff. It's hill ground. Okay. And a couple other things I'd like to point out, and I'm sure this board's aware of it, but probably some of the gallery is not. We are required by law to base our value on market, which means we do a market study every year.
and try and determine what land is selling for, and then from that we try to adjust our values accordingly. On this chart, you want one? I got all kinds of here.
Okay. Now make sure the attorney gets one.
Oh, I do. She's special. Hold on. I've got some more here for the gallery in case somebody wants them too. So let me get over here first and take care of these guys.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Ready up, Tom? All right. The newspaper loses because I don't have. That's my last one. I'll give you one afterwards. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, we are required by law to value based on sales. And long story made short, what we do is we take all of the sale prices, we qualify the sales. They've got to be all land sales. If you've got buildings on them, we throw it out because the buildings skew the numbers. And we take the assessed value and we divide that by the sale price, and that gives us an assessment sales ratio. And if you'll notice on that first page, on the column right here, you'll see I have one highlighted in orange. Okay, these are the sales that were used to establish value in market area 2, which is the area he's in for 2009 values. You'll notice that the one in the middle, that's the one we have to deal with, is the median value, is 61%. We're required by law to be between 69 and 75%, so that in itself indicates that we have to have an increase. All right, now I'm going to take you over to page 2, and you'll notice that's a map of the county. And if you look very close, you'll see a line right here. Okay. The gallery. Right here there's a line. And that map says 2008. In 2006, 7, and 8, I had divided the county into two pieces. And the upper piece I called my Area 2. The bottom piece was my Area 3. I had a lot of sales in Area 3, but I had no sales in Area 2. So my theory was that since there were no sales up there, there's nothing to prove an increase. So I put that line in to isolate those properties from the ones to the south. Well, in the process of doing that, I had a single farmer landowner, I should say it that way, a single landowner from the south take me to court, because he felt that he should be valued the same as the ones up above. And the result of that was that I lost. The courts determined that I had no right to divide that land where I did. So they, if you go to the next page, you'll see where it says 2009. You'll notice that line is gone. The courts required that I remove that line. We took it out. When we did that, all of those sales down south then influenced values up north. All right, what happens? Well, all of a sudden these high sales get dumped on these guys. So for 3 years they got by pretty reasonable. I had them valued right down there. And then after that line got taken out, then those high sales influenced the land up north. And that land up north really took a hit. I'm sure Mr. Kimmel will agree with that.
Yeah, and I have no problem with what Dick has done. I don't like it, but I mean, he had to raise the assessed values, and he did. That's just the way it is. I don't actually fight with the 1600.
Now the
he turned around and doubled the taxes.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't. Let's
get back to where we're supposed to be. Sure.
Yeah. Huh? All right. We had that conversation the other day. She kept saying, you raised the tax. I didn't raise any taxes.
You're right.
Trust me. But anyway, then what I've done is I put the 2009 values on there so you can go back to your individual parcels and you can see that those different land classes, that's the LVD code, and what they're valued at. Now, one thing I'd like to point out on that, and this is all Area 2, I'd like to point out that the very highest value we have on ground in Area 2 is $2,200 an acre. And that's a very, very small percentage of the land we have up there. So that the $2,200 an acre doesn't happen anywhere. Every piece of property, every parcel in Area 2 is valued at less than $2,200 an acre. And if you've watched the sales, you'll notice they've gone pretty wild. All right, the next page, and this is where the rubber meets the road, folks. The next page is the levy for the Ponca School District, which is the school district most of these guys are in, for this current year. This is the one that created the increase in their taxes. And if you'll come down there, you'll see fund number 114, Ponca number 1 bond, 2009. That's the bond that went into place in 2009. You notice that bond is almost 22.5 cents. That's half, just that bond is half of your county budget. Your total county budget is only 44 cents. So that bond is a lot of money, and that's what's hitting these guys tax-wise. And the simple fact of the matter is that as a board or as an assessor or appraiser, we have no control over that. When those people voted that bond in, those fine people that live in Ponca and don't own all that ag ground, when they voted that bond in, everybody that owned a big piece of ground or an expensive piece of ground got nailed. Now that's the bottom line. And then just for comparison, I added on your little pile of paper there, I added the 2008 levies, and you'll notice that the 2008 levies on that same market area, that same tax district, was $1.77 and change. And when they put the bond in there and a couple other raises, it went to $2 and almost 2 cents. So that's where your increase came in taxes. The valuation obviously did create an increase. The valuation is related to market value. The market value is well within reason, as he suggested. The problem is, or the issue is, I don't know if it's a problem, because it's good for the guys that own the ground. We're seeing this ground sell really high. As an example, when you bought your place, you paid $408,900 for the place.
Okay.
Trust me.
Yeah. That's right.
All right. We now have it valued at $464,470. So in by our records, you bought it in 2002. That's where
I thought it was.
No, that's where
it might have been. It was purchased in 2001.
Okay. Yeah, December was the purchase date, and it was recorded in 2002. Okay. All right.
Nine years.
In those 9 years, my value versus his willing to pay is only 14%. Now that's how much it's gone up over sale price. The issue, as he well admits, and as
let's get to the summation here, shall we?
The summation is, until we find a better way to support local subdivisions, property tax is going to pay the bill. And that's the bottom line.
Okay.
With that, I'll sit down.
Questions for Dick? Mr. Minister, the board have any questions for Dick? Okay, yes, sir. You need to come up to the podium, and you need to sign in because your name is not on the agenda.
Okay. Right here. Just because the valuation goes up doesn't necessarily mean, usually if that happens in the past, I always thought, and maybe a year or so down the road, doesn't a mill levy usually back off a little bit? That's what creates, if the mill levy goes with the valuations, there's where we get in trouble. So why, unless we need the money, unless the county's spending that money, why doesn't the mill levy back off?
The mill levy is set by the needs of the county. We go through a budget process, we establish a budget of what we need to run the county. Then that is equated against the property. That then gives you the mill levy in order to raise the money for operation of the county. Now, sometimes property value goes up, mill levy stays the same, you get more money. If it goes up and the levy goes down, there's less.
But you're going to get more money if the mill levy stays the same and the valuation goes up without raising the mill levy, right?
Correct.
But the levy is set by the amount of money needed to run the county.
But the way it looks to me like this mill levy is getting clear out of hand with the valuations, and the valuations already, we know that they're, some of it is way too high, but that's the way it is. But if the mill levy goes accordingly, we will be taxed out of business. That's okay. The problem.
What has not been expressed here is the fact that the unicameral in Nebraska established that the county can only raise the levy to 50 cents. That's the limit. You can't go over that. And last year, not this year, but last year, we were down to 42. We had gone from 48 cents down to 42 cents because of what we had, what we needed, and the revenue that was coming in. That revenue, some of it, was coming from housing federal prisoners. So as we get money for housing federal prisoners, we were able to lower the levy.
That and that affects not, all of us, right?
That affects everybody. Every property owner. Yes. You were paying less because it dropped from 48 to 42. This year it had to go back up because we have fewer federal prisoners. So the levy increased this year by about 1.5 cents, right? So it did go up, but it was a mile. It's not as high as it was at 48. And I know that you are paying the money out of your pocket. It doesn't seem like that. But right. This group is trying its best to keep that levy down.
I hope.
Well, we are. I'll guarantee you.
I guarantee you
they are. And you can ask any one of the department heads.
Hell, I'm sure you guys got a tough job. Things there, but if a guy doesn't stay on top of this all the way through, we're going to be.
And I agree with you.
In terrible trouble.
But the issue is really not something that we can handle here at this board, because it's set by unicameral, by state law, that you raise your money by property tax. That counties, that's the way you do it. So then they say this is how you're going to raise your money to operate with. The state doesn't do property tax, only the counties, and of course the city, but that's how you raise your money. You set that levy. That levy, they put a limit on it. You can't go over 50 cents. So we have to stay with under 50 cents and still run the county.
So that mill levy, now that's for Dakota County, whether you're, the school districts have a lot of effect on taxes.
That's correct.
I understand that, because I've got a quarter in Emerson District, which is way down.
That's correct. But, they're probably the largest taxing agency in the county is the school district.
Right.
No question about it. I'm not saying that's good or bad.
Okay.
Having been a school teacher, I would say I don't think it's bad.
Okay.
If I could add one more thing. One thing that everybody needs to remember, the total levy this year in the Ponca School District was $2.02 for sake of discussion. Of that, 25 cents of that from a year ago was an increase by the Ponca School District. The only thing the county increased was about 1.5 cents. So the county did a pretty good job of holding their levy down. But it's the school, and there's actually 10 different government subdivisions or entities that contribute to the total levy. And what you've got to do is you've got to go to the budget meetings, you've got to go to those hearings when they start talking about budget, and you've got to find out where they're spending your money. Because that's the whole thing in a nutshell. But the Ponca School is taking $1.35 right now, and the county is only taking 44 cents. So the Ponca School District, for sake of discussion, is 3 times greater in expense for a taxpayer than is the county budget.
So a lot of the problems that you're having is set by state law. Now we have to follow
it up on the state.
No.
What's that?
No.
But the county sets the mill levy.
The county only sets its mill levy. The school district sets its own mill levy. The colleges set their own mill levy. Right. But does that mill levy change every year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Does that go up every year?
It'll up or down.
Down.
It can go up or down.
It can go either way. Yep.
Based upon the property valuation and the needs of the county to run
it. But if the valuation of this property keeps going up, does that mean that the mill levy is going to automatically go with it or not?
No. No, it doesn't automatically do that. The mill levy goes upon the needs of the county to run the county.
Okay.
Well, and then that goes against the total valuation of the county, and that it gives you your mill levy. Yeah. And it goes up and it goes down. Okay. If we have more revenue coming in,
well, maybe we won't have a raise now for another couple of years.
Right.
Maybe we won't have a change in the next couple of years.
We hope. We hope.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dick.
Thank you.
All right. Now, with your permission, we'll move back to the top of the agenda, where we left off. Next item is consent agenda. We can do this with one vote if you so desire. The items on the consent agenda is renew the employee associate agreement, deposit of securities, commissioner meeting times, courthouse hours, designation of the legal newspaper for the county, declare the holidays and early closings, and you have a calendar showing you what that is, that has been set up by the clerk. Approve the policy for opening and closing of graves, designation of county government day, department heads' appointment and reappointments. They would be the veteran service officer, Alan Boyd. Highway superintendent would be Chad Kurt and Ocean Associates. Planning and zoning administrator, Arnie Malik. Weed superintendent, Leon Pease. And emergency management director, Pat Fowles. Is there anything on that list that you would like to have taken off of the consent agenda and voted on separately?
Give a working class a chance to get it out there, five or six.
If there's something that you want taken out of that, it can be extracted off of that and then the rest of it handled. Or you can take it all in one swoop. What's your pleasure?
Well, I would like to bring up, and I know we talked about this a year ago, the possibility of meeting every other week.
Okay, you want to remove that from the consent agenda? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. That has to do with the calendar, correct?
Mm-hmm. No, it has to do with meeting dates.
Yep.
Isn't that on here?
Commission meeting.
Pardon?
Yeah, it should be.
So we have to remove which of these items?
Probably the meeting dates.
Commissioner meetings, up at the top.
Commissioner meetings.
Commissioner meetings?
Yeah.
Okay, the commissioner meetings will be removed from the consent agenda. Your pleasure on the rest of it. Anything else you'd like to remove?
Courthouse hours. Okay. I don't know if there's... right now we're opening at 8 and closing at 4:30.
Okay.
I don't know if that could be moved to accommodate people that get off work at 5, because they'd have a little time to get in here and do their business after 5. I don't know if that's something that we want to talk about or not.
You want to extract that from consent agenda, vote on separately?
A little discussion, see what everybody else thinks.
Well, I mean, we just move it off and then discuss it later, Rick.
We can.
Okay, anything else you'd like removed? Okay. Are you prepared to vote on the consent agenda, removing those two items?
So
need a motion.
I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded to approve the consent agenda, less the commissioner meetings and the courthouse hours. Call roll.
Buskay?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes. Okay, we'll now move to commissioner meetings.
Todd, we've got to have the door open.
I think you probably closed it because of noise.
I know.
Well, I understand. All right, Bill, commissioner meetings.
talk to Ted a little bit about this, if it'd be possible. I know we meet a lot of times the third Monday of the month because of claims. Ted thought it'd be possible to go to the two-meeting-a-month system every other week and do claims, maybe a trial period through March, see if it'll work out. So many times we get here, some of these meetings only last a half an hour. And my thoughts are, if we can meet twice a month instead of a lot of months, three times a month, I'd rather stay a little longer and skip a meeting.
So what you're saying is just try for like a couple months, you know, and
give it a trial.
Review in March, and if
go through March.
Go through March, and then
January is already set because they've been advertised. So we can do February, March. Try it, and maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. Maybe it'll be too big of a load for the clerk. You know.
You're talking. When would you do accounts payable with each payroll?
The claims every 2 weeks.
Claims every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Payroll claims every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. What's everybody else think?
Well, I think it's worth to try.
Let's try it for 2 months. Claims every 2 weeks, that won't throw us behind on bill paying or anything.
No.
Won't throw us out of whack.
No.
Okay. That's fine.
Want to try?
I think it's worth a try.
I'll move to set the meetings in every other week, beginning in February through March.
Okay, February and March, we'll go to two meetings, which will be every other week. Correct? Okay? That's your understanding?
Yep, and I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded for a trial period to end February and March to go to two meetings on a every other week basis. Discussion? None from the board. Anybody in the audience like to address this issue? Hearing none, would you call roll?
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Muskay?
Yes.
Okay, now moving to courthouse hours. Rick?
Well, I've had a number of people that have talked to me in the past and said that they don't get off work until 5 o'clock and that they've got to take time off their jobs to come in and do their business, licensing cars, paying their taxes and such. And I was wondering if we couldn't change the hours to accommodate more people.
All right, just to the point, we only are designated when the door is open and the door is closed for to the public, correct? Is that right?
No.
When the courthouse doors, main door is open and the main door is locked, right?
So each office controls their own
so
time.
Each, so that's what I'm getting to. Then each office, the treasurer, the clerk, all the courts, they all set their own hours within that time frame. They could still stay on 8 to 4:30 if they wanted to.
Then why would we even have that in there?
Because we have to set the hours by statute, as I understand it.
Kim, is that statute?
Pardon?
Yeah, you have to set the courthouse hours.
But each office, each individual office has the authority to open and close their office. We have no authority over their offices of when they can open and close. Because it kind of seems senseless to me that we have the authority to open and close the courthouse, but yet have no authority over the offices of which they can open and close.
That's the question.
I can see the court systems, you know, but like the treasurer and the clerk and registered deeds. And
generally they go by, as our office does, goes by the handbook, the 8 to 4:30, but yeah, they could close at a different time if they wanted to.
I see. Well, there's no sense in changing it then.
No sense in what?
There's no sense in changing the courthouse opening and closing, because I doubt that they would change.
The other effect that that would have, in my mind, Rick, is that you have employees, contracted or agreement, so many hours a day. How would you cover that other half hour? Would you have some come in early, someone come in late? I think that's a decision the department has have to make, but we don't.
Right. And there are some other courthouses in the counties that are doing things like closing their courthouses for half days so that they can save money, or closing it at one whole day?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, they are. There are.
They are in Iowa, I know, but I don't know.
I think there are some in Nebraska that I heard, too.
We have to move or act on the courthouse hours, either leave it the same or make a change. Need a motion?
Well, if we need to get off dead center, I say we'll just leave it alone, but I think we need more clarification on what we can do and can't do. But I'll make a motion and we leave it alone then.
8 to 4:30.
Yeah.
Second.
Motion made and seconded that the courthouse hours will remain the same from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, except holidays, as provided in the employee handbook and contract. Discussion?
I think Rick does have a good point.
Pardon?
I think Rick does have a good point. And probably the only office courthouse that would really affect people would be the treasurer's office now that they do titles and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So 90% of our walk-in traffic is for licensing or paying taxes or titling. And maybe that's something that should be considered someday. But if the department head someday would go for that, I think it'd be a good idea.
Okay. Any other discussion from the board? Questions?
Probably what we need to do is talk to the head department, you know, at the treasurer's office and see how he feels about it.
A few minutes ago, we had a gentleman up here that was complaining about his taxes, and they pay everybody's wages. Mm-hmm. So we need to start accommodating people. You know, if we're going to have a high levy and we're going to have high valuations and we're going to be taxing people as such, we need to be accommodating service,
sure,
at least.
It would just be probably the one office.
Treasurer's office.
That'd be the one that's there. Maybe a couple.
We got people out here that are working 9 to 5 or 8 to 5, pay their taxes.
I'll go along with you. 100%.
And they have to take time off work, which cuts into their salaries.
Yeah, I know.
So that's what I was trying to cover.
That's a good point. Can we go ahead and put the 8 to 4, but then talk about this?
8 to 4?
8 to 4:30. You know, and then could we? Well, you got a motion now and seconded.
Yeah, it's
you got a motion on the floor for it to remain the same.
Yeah. Let me ask this: can we adjust that, or is that set for the whole year?
Well, right now, if the motion would go through and pass, it would be for the whole year.
Hmm. So, in other words, if we would talk to Bob Giese and Bob Giese would say, "Hey, I'll open at 9 and stay till 6. We can't do that because the courthouse hours are not as such.
Well, yeah, what we're stating is the opening of the main doors.
Yeah, yeah.
He can run his whatever he wants, but of course it's useless if we close the doors at 4:30 and he stays open to 6.
Right? Exactly.
No, I see your point. Yes, I do, really. Yeah, I really do.
Motion stand.
Thanks for your support. Thanks.
Stands. For the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anyone in the audience like to address the board on this issue? Hearing none, call roll.
McNair?
Yeah.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Busquet?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
Okay, going to the next item is the appointments of and advisors to various boards. And also we'll go to the next one, which is the appointment of members to serve on working committees. They stand unless we have somebody that wants to be withdraw, and we can get an agreement for another person to take that slot. Is there anybody that would like to switch?
On the Goldenrod Hills, we have Bill Engelhardt here.
Yeah, as I understand, that was set previously for a period of time.
Okay.
I'll I'll make a motion, we just leave it the way it is.
I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded to leave the appointments as they are. Questions, comments? Call roll.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes.
Bousquet?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Okay, next item is approval of the payroll. There are no problems with the payroll.
So moved.
I second it.
Motion made and seconded to approve the payroll claims.
I'm sorry, who did that? He moved and seconded.
He moved and I seconded.
Any comments? Call roll.
McLarty?
Yes.
Bousquet?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
Okay. Moving down to the next item, miscellaneous. Need to approve the officials' report.
Can I bring them next meeting?
Then we don't approve the next meeting, okay?
Okay.
All right, we'll ask to table that till the next meeting.
I'll make a motion to table.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to table the officials' report to the next meeting. Call roll.
Bousquet?
Yes.
Rohde?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
McLarty?
Yes. Table items, there are none. Board committee report.
Our roads.
Yeah.
Budget is going to be way out of whack with this two big storms. I think we've applied for some FEMA money.
Yeah.
Possibly get some assistance.
Met with Deanna Beckman, and we have signed a resolution in order to apply for FEMA money to assist. Dakota County was one of the counties named by the governor as an emergency need, so it qualifies. Now the question now is getting all the information collected and the amount of money spent on the road and emergency items, and then submit that, and then we'll see how much they'll pay us to cover our costs. So that has been done. Yeah. The one in December is done, as I understand it. We now have the one that followed it 2 weeks later, and we've signed that one, and it's going. So
I think that first storm was roughly $80,000. And we brought in some outside help just because we couldn't keep the roads open. We got some motors, got some private contractors. We're trying a big snowboard this afternoon, Doug Peterson.
Yeah.
And just open up these roads. There's no place to go with the snow anymore, so we're going to try that.
Okay. Any other reports?
I'd like to say that our road department went beyond the call of duty trying to keep the roads open. They worked
day and night,
hard.
It's very difficult to be living in the county and your road isn't open, and the plows are out opening all the main roads first. But when you're sitting there snowbound, it's very difficult to wonder why they're not there in front of your place yet. But there's a matter of priorities, and you have certain designated areas, main roads that have to be open first and kept open. If it had been just a snowstorm and that'd been the end of it, that'd been fine. But we had high winds and it kept blowing closed on them. So they had to keep going back through on the priority roads. So I understand the concern of the people that were locked in their houses for 3 and 4 days and couldn't get out. I understand that.
I had people calling me. They were all upset because we didn't get out there that morning. I called Fred, talked to Fred, had a long talk with him. And I said, all we're going to do is open these roads up because the wind ain't going to die down. It was on the news, the wind wasn't going to die down all day. And I said, Fred, the best thing to do is hold off until the wind dies down, because you're going to get people out, they're not going to get back, and then they're going to wonder why. So probably it was our fault, but that's the best you can do. You can't do no more.
Well, when the emergency center is saying roads were closed, 20 right. was closed, 77 was closed, the interstate was closed,
right.
and the best to stay off the road, what else are you going to do? Yeah.
It's a mess.
No, I think they did a fine job.
We got drifts out there all the big.
Any other reports? I would point out we have P&Z terms that are ending. Last year we went through a process of having them apply for those positions and then appointing people. We set that precedence. Is that your desire to do that again?
I believe we need to follow the procedure and see if there's anybody that applies, and if they don't.
Which means then we put an ad in the paper, right? That's what we did, and have people apply for it. So is that what you want to do?
Yeah.
I don't think we can't do that today, can we? We can't vote on that today because it's not on the agenda. But I think it's something to think about. That's what
we've got to have one for the Board of Adjustment, too, because he quit.
Yeah.
Larson quit, so that Board of Adjustment's going to have to be filled, too.
Okay, but we'll have to put that on next week's agenda.
Okay.
Budget update, I passed it out. Everybody received a copy.
Right.
I would call your attention, there are 9 departments that are over budget. I think that's something for us to take a look at. And what we want to do about it, I'm not sure. But I think we need to be concerned about it. Total budget-wise for the county, we're under budget. But we have some departments that are over. Next thing I would point out to you or bring up to your attention is at noon, Terry Kern gave his speech at the chamber legislative meeting, and I provided you a copy of the slides so you can see what he talked about on the status of the jail. You also have the noxious weed report where you look at. It will be on the agenda next week. I also received information that the Department of Labor is doing audits on personnel payments, claims, and NERMA has stated that they would come and look at our records, but there's a fee attached of $1,000, so it's something for you to think about. I only bring it to your attention. And the last thing I have is jail standards meeting is on the 22nd. Terry Kern is going down to appear before the jail standards in reference to the jail. He has the ability to add some more beds to it with their permission. We're running right at the full number. And so he's going down to ask, or I think it's 12 or 18 more beds to be put into it, into the jail, to help us during the peak time. He also is going to talk to them a little bit about the old jail, or they're going to talk to him. I'm not sure which way the conversation's going. So those are things I have. Anything else?
I didn't have any meetings.
Okay, we'll now go to public comment. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the board on any issue that was not on the agenda?
No, I'm not.
You get the pleasure of signing in again.
I'm not sure what I'm talking about here.
Oh.
Well,
yeah.
There's a lot of us in that category.
But I think it should be brought up if it happens. And I'm sure maybe you guys have already heard about it. I don't know. I assume you have. But something about the state of Nebraska is going to knock us down from 92 counties to 30?
Okay. There's a bill before the legislature to do that.
Okay. So now that's only 8 years from now, 20,000 or 20, whatever, 18. Now, does the state have control of this? Do the counties get a vote on this?
The unicameral controls it.
Yeah.
Your state senator.
The state senator.
Okay. And would you think it would pass? I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
You'll need to ask Bob
Geese. Okay.
Yeah,
but let's say that it does go. And we're Dakota County, and we're having a heck of a lot of problems, budget-wise. And then we got Dixon, and we got Thurston. I don't know which one's below Winnebago. Is that Burt County? Would this all have to be started to be chit-chatted by now, or do they have to wait until the unicameral or whatever?
I think the unicameral, my opinion, seeing how they've operated in the past, they'll get a bill on the floor, and then they'll put it to a study. And then they'll go around and get input.
Okay. So it's basically a consolidation of all these counties.
And then they would come back and make a decision.
Okay.
But I think they would have a study in which whatever committee it's assigned to would then go around the state and have maybe four or five public hearings where people in that geographic area could come in and speak on that issue.
Okay. I know it's a long way from now, but I'm thinking the way things are going, consolidation, you know, when South Dakota City consolidated with South Sioux Falls, Mom said it wouldn't happen for years. Don't worry about it. Damn, the next year we were up there. So I just think that this is 8 years away, that maybe the county should be looking in a little bit to this. I know it's nothing to panic about, and it's...
I'm sure Bob will keep us informed on it.
Yeah, as well. Just a suggestion, you know, if you get with Bob Easy, you know, and talking to him and tell him your concerns and you know, your
thoughts. Is that also Jeff Fogelberry or whatever his name is?
Well,
Fortenberry, no, he's
in
Washington.
He's in Washington.
He's Congress.
Okay. Bob Easy will be the guy. Yeah, just
hang out.
Bob gets you the list.
Okay, Betty?
Tell you what happened with selective service.
You need to come up to the podium, Betty. That way you get it on the mic.
Okay, when selective service had to combine, Christoph brought Cedar County into South Sioux. So Dakota County got, and then they at the next time they brought Thurston and Dixon in. So it would appear that if this happens, I would guess that they would bring it all to Dakota County. Haven't the state done that before with selective service and all that? So I would guess they probably used it.
Okay, thank you, Betty. Anyone else?
I missed the board member reports. I had a comment. Can I speak now?
Let me get through this one. Yeah. Any other comments or questions from the audience? Having none, Bill?
I'd just like to thank everybody for their support and prayers and cards and flowers and food during the loss of my mother. Myself and my family really appreciate it. And thanks again.
Really thank you, Bill.
Overwhelming.
God bless you.
Thank you. Anything else from the board? Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
Motion made and seconded to adjourn. Call roll.
McLarty?
Yes.
Ms. Gay?
Yes.
Brody?
Yes.
McNair?
Yes.
Gomez?
Yes.
My
wife.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Appreciate your time.